This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Queer representation in TV has been scarce, and a new study has looked into trends of queer representation on TV. So, what are the findings?
Gender, sexuality, and pop culture. There isn't much Lauren Rosewarne doesn't know, and if she doesn't, we'll make it up.
Lauren Rosewarne, good afternoon.
Hello, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Is the representation of gender and sexually diverse people on TV still considered radical?
That's a big question. I think probably not radical. I think the storylines they may find themselves in might be a little bit radical, and that would probably be more pronounced, for example, for trans characters, whereas because they've had a shorter period of time on television. But certainly I think the takeaway from this 20-year study or 20 years worth of data is that things are looking better, which is a good thing, because I think certainly for diverse audiences, they've been looking for better representation. And this study confirms it's a slow journey, but things are getting a little bit better.
When did it first appear? When did queer representation first appear?
So 1970s, and Australia actually sort of, I guess you could say, kicks a goal in the sense of had the first lesbian kiss of any television network in the world. The UK was a couple of weeks later. But a lot of these decisions in terms of that really long delay in representation have a lot to do with, it's called the Hays Code. And this was the production code in the US that was in place from the 40s until the late 60s, which really dictated all of these bizarre rules about what could and couldn't be shown on screen. So things like it was offensive to show toilets, for example, and if characters were in bed, one foot always had to be on the ground. And
what?
If you, and
one foot,
yeah,
on the ground?
Yeah, to show that this wasn't a sexual situation. And one of the two things that if you read through it, it's bizarre the amount of things that that were restricted. But it had specific rules around deviancy, and this is where not only representations of sexual and gender diverse characters, but also even things like abortion. If you were to include them, the characters always had to be punished. And that idea of, you know, the kill your gaze stereotype or trope really came out of that, in the sense that either they were really sort of concealed gay characters where are they or aren't they, we can't say, or we're going to murder them because we need to punish them. And like so many years of characters who had abortions dying in a car crash by the end of the film, that was because there was literally a law that you wouldn't get your TV show or your movie screened in the United States until you met this code. That all changed by the end of the 60s. So by the 70s, that's the sort of history lesson. By the 70s, you started to see things change, because that production code that was so influential on TV around the world, it broke down and networks started to be more risque. I mean, even if you compare Australian TV now to the 70s, there was certainly more explicit content on television in the 70s than now, but not as related to queer presentation.
Where did this Hays Code come from?
High-level Puritanism that was happening in the United States, and it was one of the measures that was being used to ensure moral purity. So, look, throughout the entire history of media, there has always been groups in society that feel that media has this very negative influence on society. Think about, you know, in the 90s, the rock music trials or hearings in the US, or be it violent video games recently. That idea that content influences behavior, and if you come from this of the perspective that anything other than heterosexual missionary position sex is a problem, then you'll see media representations being a problem and contributing to delinquency.
I love that word, moral purity. I reckon I'm pure when it comes to morals. Do you reckon you are?
We all are. We set the standards here.
That's funny. You mentioned that the first lesbian kiss
Yes.
Was on Australian television. Do you know what the public reaction was at the time?
Look, that's interesting because if you think about the legislative landscape that was happening in Australia, it hadn't been decriminalised in most states at that point. Now, admittedly, lesbian sex has always gone under the radar. In most countries, the laws are written around the assumption that it's only men who can have sex because of very limited understandings of what constitutes sex. So most of the legislation has always been about clamping down on, the anti-sodomy type laws. So I think that the lesbian kiss was probably less offensive, but I dare say still very controversial. I mean, think about the scandal where not so long ago when there was it on Play School where a book got read about a child that had two mothers.
Well, that's right.
And that still got some level of backlash, even in a world where, now we have same-sex marriage, for example, but that idea, or marriage equality, but that idea that can still be controversial for some groups means, of course, not everyone's going to be happy with this content. And look, I guess we could say that's okay. You can be unhappy in the privacy of your home, but you don't get to dictate the content that other people choose to watch.
Now, I suppose many of the representations on TV, they were focused on coming out.
Yes.
Is that because the TV producers thought, they needed to gently introduce a gay character rather than just having a gay character with their own story and independent life? I mean, would that be too much?
So this is one of those things where there's a number of different explanations. One is certainly the idea of humanizing a gay character in the sense that if you go through them on their journey and see them as a real person, that you will be more sympathetic or at least empathetic to their story. So that's one explanation. The other is, as you say, this idea of a kind of getting the culture used to this and the idea there that this isn't just a salacious presentation, but is actually a journey. But the journey sort of storyline is also youth oriented as well. So you saw that more in shows that were targeted towards a young audience, much like you'd have, for example, first period stories in shows that were targeted towards a pre-teen audience. It's a topic that's disproportionately interesting to young people. And one of the concerns or at least one of the interests for people seeking more diversity in presentations is surely we can move past this. That doesn't mean a coming out story is not of interest to some people, but that can't be the only trajectory for a queer character. Because if so, they're always going to be locked into their identity being their sexual orientation or their sexual preference being the sole definer of their character.
That's it.
And there's always been that idea.
There's nothing else to us.
Yeah, characters that do other things.
We just perpetually come out to everyone.
Or, that's right, just every day, Warren's out
who
again.
Who have I come out to today? That's all I can do. It's the only thing I know.
Which, there you've got that stereotype of the gay best friend, in that sense of that was all the identity was, is sassy one-liners. And look, you could say that's part of the journey. You get audiences used to that character. Mm. Then you've sort of fleshed them out a bit more. But again, it's been slow given that this isn't just gay people didn't just arrive on the scene 30 years ago or 50 years ago. And that, I think, is the frustrating part for some audiences.
Lauren, I don't think I've ever come out to you, have I? No.
Come on, time to do it. And we'll set aside some time each segment where you can do it.
Just in case you forget.
Just in case we forget.
Now, when did we see gay characters starting to appear that actually were already out? So they've got something more to their life than what I have.
Yes. So this is considered a sort of 2000s phenomenon. And again, still something that's not always the norm, but improving, where you're having characters who it happens to be one of their characteristics, but not all of their characteristics. I think the biggest kind of gap that we're seeing is trans representation. And certainly in Australia, the data set has no representations at all of trans characters on TV in Australia before 2012. Now, that's not the case the world over. There are, of course, examples from other countries, but that's actually really, really recent that this presentation has started. But if you think about what happened in 2012, that was the Caitlyn Jenner Jenner year. There was a lot of things happening culturally, that some good and some horrible, that put trans people into the spotlight, if you like. And I think that created more of a readiness for such characters.
Lauren, Wayne in Brisbane's really upset. He's annoyed. He says
he wants to come out as well.
I think so. He says, back then, white male TV executives didn't want anything gay on TV, but would sit there stuffing their mouth full of hot dogs. I think he's implying something.
Yeah, yeah, you know, something I will say on that point is an interesting thing about why, and I wrote about this a couple of years ago, of a really long history of no male full frontal nudity in film or TV for so long, or being so isolated or needing such a high rating, but then you'd have, you know, full frontal female nudity aplenty. And that interesting decision that's made by male executives around what audiences not only want to see but are comfortable with. And I think that's, again, there's some hypocrisy there, but there's also, I think, some anxiety stuff as well, which I think is interesting.
We've reviewed a couple of things with Susie Wrong here on a Tuesday, but in general, are queer stories starting to be told in mainstream shows, or do we still just have queer characters?
So the idea of the mainstream now is breaking down, and that's got to do with the fact that there are so many more platforms full of content, which means the good thing about that is that streaming services, for example, can take more risks. So they are more likely to have content that, to go back to, you know, the word you used earlier, I think we said revolutionary or shocking. That idea of having storylines that are very, very daring, you're going to see those more so in shows that are on streaming services because they cost less both to make and to broadcast, as opposed to something that's on network television, which needs a bigger audience and is also more concerned with advertising dollars. And it's the advertisers that tend to pull their ads if a show looks like it's going to upset too many people. Streaming services don't have to care about
that. They don't, do they? It's great.
No, and this is why, I know I've done lots of research on this, and this is always that thing of why don't we see more diversity on X, Y, and Z? It's like, stop looking at cinema to fill that gap. Stop looking at broadcast TV to fill that gap. It's being done, but it's being done on streaming services because the risk is less for the networks.
And I imagine they are increasing their share of the audience as well.
Absolutely, because this is what's happened with fragmented audiences. We don't just have three or five channels anymore, and we're not the networks don't get to control us in that respect. We not only can get to watch what we want, but also when we watch and where we watch it as well.
The only free-to-air show that I watch now is the 7 p.m. news. That's it.
I watch Hard Quiz on
that's
ABC.
Always on.
But yeah.
Every time I turn it on.
Maybe it's not a choice. It's kind of like how when I go to my parents' house on the weekends, it's always border control on at their house, and it's not like they even like it. It just seems like whenever they put the TV on, it's always someone trying to smuggle a casserole in.
Maybe they're starting up a bit of a smuggling racket.
Maybe they're learning
you.
All they can about how to bring in raw fish.
They're too scared to come out to you, Lauren.
I'll ask them again, Warren. It's getting ridiculous now.
Chat to you next week. Thanks for joining us.
Talk to you then. Thanks, Warren.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.